Chapter 8, July 11. Mom changed the rules so I can eat brunch on Mondays. She says it isn't fair for me to fast on Sundays and then not eat until Monday night. Of course, she isn't eating until Monday night, but we're not supposed to notice. Fasting wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I got real hungry around lunchtime, but it wore off as the day went along. I guess I'll get used to it. It's hard to be sure, but I think things are getting grayer. Peter dropped by this afternoon. We told him our plans, and he thought they were good ones. He especially approved of boiling the drinking water. I asked him about swimming. It's probably better if you stopped, he said. The people with town water are telling me it's discolored, and there are concerns about how much longer it's going to last. All that takes electricity, and we know how well the power plants are working these days. But what does that have to do with the pond, I asked. It's hard to predict what people will do if they don't have running water, Peter said. They might start taking their dirty clothes to the pond to wash them there, or they might start bathing there. There's a possibility the pond will become a breeding ground. Nowadays, it's better to be safe than sorry. At least he didn't list the symptoms of cholera. That, for Peter, showed real restraint. I guess I'll go swimming tomorrow anyways. Maybe Dan will show up. Maybe the sun will shine. July 12. No Dan, no sun, no electricity, no word from Johnny or Dad. July 13. Matt stopped running. It took me 5 days to realize that. I finally asked, and he said he'd stopped on Saturday, partly because he's worried about air quality and partly to conserve strength. The days seem a lot shorter than just a week ago. At least it's getting darker sooner. Mom lets us use one of the oil lamps in the sunroom every evening. It doesn't cast enough light for all of us to read, so Matt and I take turns sitting near it. Mom found a bag of old yarn in the attic, and she's crocheting at night, so she doesn't need much light. I'm using the flashlight to write this now. I know I should stop. Batteries don't last forever. July 14. I did something so stupid today. I could kill myself. I'm so angry and upset. We were sitting around this evening doing our let's share the dim light routine, and around 9, Mom announced we'd used up enough oil for one night and we should go to bed. We've been on a sunrise to sunset pattern for a while now, but with that horrible gray covering over the sun, our timing is off. You can tell if the sun is up, but there are no dramatic changes. Gray at 6 a.m., gray at 6 p.m. And I don't know why, but I just didn't feel like going to bed. Maybe it's the nightmares I've been having the past couple of days. Becky pushing me into a volcano, stuff like that. I said I was going to sit on the porch before going to bed, and since sitting on the porch doesn't use up any energy, Mom had no reason to say no. So I went out onto the porch and sat there for a while, maybe half an hour. Certainly long enough that when I came back in, Mom and Matt were already in their rooms. Only when I decided to go in, I forgot about Horton. Horton goes outside in the daytime, but we're not allowed to let him out anytime after sunset. Even when we had electricity, that was the rule. Horton stays in at night. I guess Horton's as confused about what's day and what's night as the rest of us. He raced out as soon as I opened the door. I went back out and called for him, but he wasn't interested. I stayed on the porch for an extra hour calling for him and hoping he'd come back on his own, but there's no sign of him. I'd rather not use up any more flashlight battery. I just hope he's on the doorstep complaining about being forced to spend the night outside when I get up tomorrow. July 15. No Horton. I alternated between gathering kindling and looking for him. Mom and Matt searched also, but none of us saw him. Mom says I shouldn't feel bad, that it could have happened with any of us, but I know it's my fault. I'm so careless. I've always gotten into trouble because I'm careless, but most of the time I've only hurt myself. I don't know what Johnny will do if he gets home and Horton isn't back. July 16. Still no sign of Horton. Mom and I had a big fight. We haven't heard a word from Johnny in 2 weeks, and all you can think of is that damn cat? Johnny's fine, I yelled right back at her. Johnny's eating 3 meals a day. You waited until he left before you put us on starvation diets. You think I didn't notice that? You think I don't know which one of us you're betting on? I still don't believe I said that. The thoughts crossed my mind, but I haven't even written it here. It's so horrible. What if Mom truly believes only one of us is likely to make it? I know she wouldn't choose herself. But would she really pick between Matt and Johnny and me? Will a point come when she asks the two of us to give our food to the third? The thing I know is, if it comes to that, Matt wouldn't take the food. And Mom's got to know that also. When I do think about this, and I try so hard not to, I think Mom guesses I couldn't make it on my own, that no female could. Which leaves Johnny. I hate thinking like this. I hate myself for being so upset about Horton that I took it out on Mom. I hate being so selfish that it never even occurred to me Mom was worried about not hearing from Johnny. I've stopped worrying about not hearing from Dad. I just imagine a month away from here, from Mom. A month in Springfield, where for some reason the sun shines brightly and the electricity works all the time, and I'm never hungry. July 17. 3 days, and none of us have caught a glimpse of Horton. Even Mrs. Nesbitt's been looking, since Horton sometimes wanders down to her house. She thought maybe she saw him yesterday, but she isn't sure, and Matt says we shouldn't assume she really did. People see what they want to see, he said. Mom and I haven't talked since a horrible fight yesterday, which makes supper time even more fun. After supper, I go searching for Horton until it's too dark to see anything, let alone a gray tabby. Then I sit on the porch and will him to come home. Matt came out on the porch. Horton might show up tonight, he said, but we'd better start dealing with the possibility he isn't coming back. I think he's going to, I said. I think he just went searching for Johnny. When he gets hungry enough, he'll come back. It isn't like anyone else is going to feed him. Even in the gloomy darkness, I could see Matt's expression. I've gotten to know it so well lately. It's that, how am I going to tell her this one look? You know, we're in pretty good shape, he said. Compared to a lot of other people, we're doing fine. That's how he does it. He kind of slides into it, breaks it to me gently, points out how fabulous our life is before he sticks the knife in. Just say it, I demanded. It's possible Horton's been killed, Matt said, for food. I thought I was going to be sick. I don't know why that hadn't occurred to me. Maybe because until a couple of months ago, I didn't live in a world where pets were regarded as food. Look, Matt said, we've all let Horton out. If someone wanted to catch him for whatever reason, they'd have plenty of chances. All you did was let him out at night. You're not at fault. No one is. But I am, and he knows it, and Mom knows it, and Johnny'll know it, and most of all, I know it. If Horton's dead, if he's been killed, I'm the one responsible. I really don't deserve to live, not because of Horton, but if there is only so much food left, I haven't done anything to earn it. What do I do? Gather kindling? What kind of contribution is that? I hate Sundays. Everything is worse on Sundays. July 18. Monday. I stayed out all night searching and gathering kindling. I fell asleep in the woods this afternoon, just collapsed into sleep. The mosquitoes must have loved me. I have half a dozen bites I don't remember from this morning. I got in around 4, and Mom was waiting for me in the kitchen. Did you eat today, she asked. I didn't see you come in and eat. I skipped brunch, I said. I forgot about it. You don't forget about food, she said. You fasted yesterday. Today you eat. Those are the rules. You sure do like making up rules, I said. You think I like this, Mom yelled. You think I like seeing my children go hungry? You think I'm getting any pleasure from all this? Of course I don't. And I should have apologized on the spot and hugged Mom and told her how much I love her and how brave she's being and how I wish I could be just like her. Instead, I ran to my room and slammed the door behind me, just like I was 12 again. It's going to be supper time soon, and I know if I don't go out, Matt's going to drag me out. Even if he doesn't use actual force, he'll drag me out with guilt. The funny thing is, I'd just as soon not eat. It turns out if you don't eat for long enough, the idea of food becomes nauseating. That's probably how Megan's been doing it. Only she thinks going hungry is good, and I know it sucks. Supper time's going to be so much fun. July 19. No Horton, no word from Johnny. Mom and I didn't talk. Matt isn't talking much either. July 20. Today's the anniversary of the day men first walked on the moon. I learned that when I was doing all those papers about the moon. I hate the moon. I hate tides and earthquakes and volcanoes. I hate a world where things that have absolutely nothing to do with me can destroy my life and the lives of people I love. I wish the astronauts had just blown up the damn moon when they had the chance. July 21. I have now gathered almost enough kindling to build a house, but Matt keeps telling me there's no such thing as enough, and I should bring in more. It's not like I have anything else to do, so I keep going out and gathering. In a week, I'll be going to Springfield. I know. I just know everything will be better there, and that when I get home, this whole nightmare will be over. I was out doing my gathering thing when Mom found me. Sammy's here, she said. Go on in. This is the most Mom said to me in days. I figured a visit from Sammy must have really cheered her up. Maybe she brought us a can of spinach. Sammy actually looked pretty good. She's always been obsessive about her weight, but she didn't look like she'd lost very much since I saw her in June. We went out onto the porch and stared out at nothing. I've come to say goodbye, she said. I'm leaving tomorrow morning. Where are you going? I asked, remembering the laundry on the clothesline. Sammy has a kid brother a year younger than Johnny, but she hates him. She fights with her parents all the time, too. I was just as glad I wasn't going to be in that car. I met a guy, Sammy said, and I burst out laughing for the first time in a week. I don't know why that struck me as funny, except it was so obvious, and I hadn't even thought of it. Miranda, Sammy said. Sorry, I said, swallowing a few more giggles. You met a guy. I'm going with him, she said. He's heard things are better down south. Lots of people are saying that. We're going to Nashville, and if that doesn't work out, we'll try Dallas. Do your parents know? I asked. Sammy nodded. They say it's fine. He's been giving us food, so they think he's great. And he is. He's 40, and he knows a lot of people. He's been bringing us food for a couple of weeks now, and he even got gas for Dad's car and lots of bottled water. Mom and Dad would love it if he stayed, but he's been planning on moving out for a while now. He says he's been waiting until I was ready. How long have you known him? I asked. You never mentioned him at school. I met him about 4 weeks ago, she said. Love at first sight. At least for him, which is a good thing. He can have any girl he wants. I'm lucky he wants me. You don't sound all that happy, I said. Well, I'm not, Sammy said. Don't be an idiot, Miranda. I may like older guys, but not that much older. 21, 22, 23 was my absolute limit, and that was after this whole moon thing and I was drunk. But he's given my folks cartons of canned goods and gas, and Mom says maybe things really are better in Nashville, and I'll have a chance. She says the best thing a parent can do for a child now is to send them someplace where they have a chance. Only you need protection, which he'll provide me. Does he have a name? I asked. George, Sammy muttered, and we both burst out laughing. Okay, I never thought I'd end up with a 40-year-old named George, she said. And maybe we won't stick together. Maybe when we're in Nashville, I'll find myself a nice 22-year-old who can feed me, and then I'll dump George. Or maybe he'll dump me. Enough guys have. Either way, I'll be out of here, which is all I ever wanted. I tried to visit you, I said, a couple of weeks ago. No one was home. I've been thinking about visiting you, but George takes up a lot of time, Sammy said. I stopped in on Megan on my way here. She seems pissed that she's still alive. I hope you come back, I said. I hope we get to see each other again. You were the only good thing about this place once Becky died, Sammy said. You know, when she died, I figured out that life is short and you have to make the best of what time you have. Of course, I didn't expect it to be quite this short, and I didn't think the best would be a 40-year-old guy named George. But that's how it goes. Anyway, I'm really going to miss you, and I wanted to say goodbye. She got up, and we hugged. She never once asked how I was doing or how Mom and Matt and Johnny were. She came, she told me her news, and she left. I know I'll never see her again. I hate her for leaving, and I feel sorry for her leaving the way she is. And for a change, the ache in my stomach isn't from hunger. Or at least not from hunger alone. July 22. The best day in ages. It started with finding Horton at the kitchen door. He was scratching and yowling and demanding to be let in immediately. We all heard him. It was just after sunrise, or what passes for sunrise these days, and we raced out of our bedrooms and ran downstairs. Matt got there first, but I was right behind him, and Mom was less than a foot away. Matt opened the door, and Horton strolled in like the past week hadn't happened. He rubbed his head against our ankles and then walked over to his food bowl. Fortunately, there was still some dry food in it, which he ate in two gulps. Mom opened up a can of food for him and poured him some fresh water. We all watched as he ate. Then, just because he's a cat, and cats love to drive people crazy, he used the litter. "He couldn't do that outside?" Mom asked, but she was laughing when she said it. We were all laughing. I think Horton was laughing right along with us. He curled up on Johnny's bed and slept for the next 6 hours. When I came back in from my kindling hunt, he was still asleep on the bed. I petted him and scratched his ears and told him how much we loved him. I guess he agreed because I could hear him purring. Then Mom went to the post office to pick up our mail, and there were 5 letters from Johnny waiting for her. The last one was dated Monday. "He's fine. Camp is fine. He's eating okay. Playing baseball is fun, etc." I don't think any of the letters was more than a paragraph long, and they all said pretty much the same thing, but it didn't matter. We heard from Johnny. Mom could stop worrying. We celebrated at supper tonight. Mom declared this National Good News Day. She brought Mrs. Nesbitt over and we feasted. Mom warmed up a can of chicken and served it with noodles and mixed vegetables. We even had dessert, canned peaches. Mrs. Nesbitt donated a jar of apple juice. It's been getting chillier and chillier, and after supper we went into the sunroom and built a fire in the wood stove. Not a big roaring fire, but enough to take the chill off. Mom lit a couple of candles, and we had the oil lamp going, and the wood stove cast off a glow. We spent the evening sipping our apple juice. I think Mom was pretending it was wine. And telling stories. Mrs. Nesbitt told us about what things were like during the Depression and World War II, and what was different now, and what was the same. Mr. Nesbitt was on a submarine during the war, and she told us things he had told her about what life was like there. Horton sat on all our laps. He hopped from one lap to another until he finally settled on Matt's. I guess Matt is as close to Johnny as Horton could find. I feel so much better about things. After a day like today, I feel like we will make it through. That if we love each other and work hard enough, we'll survive whatever might happen next. July 25. I dreamed that Becky was working in a candy store. I saw her and she told me to come in and take as much candy as I wanted. There were counters filled with different kinds of chocolates, and after the most wonderful agonizing indecision, I asked for a piece of Rocky Road fudge. I even ate a bite or two before I woke up. And I swear my mouth tasted of chocolate until I realized it was a dream. I couldn't hear anyone moving around, so I stayed in bed and fantasized about chocolate. I thought about chocolate cake and Oreo cookies and chocolate chip ice cream and hot fudge sundaes and hot chocolate. Hershey bars and Nestle Crunch and peppermint patties. German chocolate cake, which I don't even like. Black Forest cake. Reese's peanut butter cups. Chocolate milk. Chocolate shakes, soft vanilla ice cream cones, chocolate dipped. Now the closest I get to chocolate is in my dreams. July 27. Can we have a moment, Mom asked me, which I figured meant something was happening that I wouldn't like. Mom and I have been getting along great all week, and I didn't see how I could have done anything too awful without knowing it. So I guessed it was just more end-of-the-world stuff. We went into the sunroom, which probably should be renamed the Gray Room. There's been a change in plan, Mom said. I got a letter from your father, and it affects you. Is he okay, I asked. Is it Grandma? Your father is fine, Mom said, and Lisa is well. He doesn't know how Grandma is. He hasn't heard from her in a while. Miranda, I know you've been looking forward to your month in Springfield, but that's not going to happen this year. Why not? I asked, trying to sound mature and civilized about it. What I wanted to do was scream and pout and throw a temper tantrum. Mom sighed. You know how things are, she said. Anyway, Lisa is desperate to see her parents, to be with them when the baby is born, and your father is equally worried about Grandma. So they're planning to close the place in Springfield, pick up Johnny at camp, visit for a couple of days before they take off. You'll get to see your father, but you won't have an extended visit. Sweetie, I'm really sorry. I know she is. I know she loves me, and she's worked really hard to make sure Matt and Johnny and I all see Dad and talk to him and feel like he's still our father. But I also know that if Johnny and I were in Springfield for August, that would stretch our food supply out a lot longer, like 60 suppers worth, not to mention breakfasts and lunches. Sometimes I wonder if when Mom looks at me, she sees me or she sees a can of carrots. I know I've been crazy thinking about Springfield as some kind of pre-moon haven. Conditions there must be about the same as they are here. Dad has some sense of how things are going here, and if there was plenty of everything in Springfield, at the very least he'd tell Matt and Johnny and me to move in with him. Lisa may not like it, but I bet he'd tell Mom to come also. I understand how scared Lisa must be, being pregnant with the world in the condition it's in. I'd want to be near Mom if I were pregnant. Of course, if I were pregnant, Mom would kill me. Speaking of not being pregnant, I haven't seen Dan in weeks. Not since I stopped going to Miller's Pond. I know it's impossible to call since the phones aren't working anymore, and it's tricky to drop in for a visit. But he does know where I live, and I don't see why he's ignoring me. Even Peter shows up occasionally, if only to tell us a dozen new ways people are dying. I wonder how far Sammy's gotten and how Dad and Lisa plan to get gas along the way. Maybe things really are better down south or west. Maybe we should be leaving too. I don't see what good staying here is doing. Matt came in this evening from his day of tree chopping, and he showed off his biceps. It was sad, really. His biceps were impressive, but he's gotten so thin. It looked like all his muscle tone was in his upper arms. He said that actually his legs got a good workout with all that chopping as well. And except for being hungry, he's never felt stronger in his life. I'm glad one of us is feeling strong, because it sure isn't me. Maybe Dad'll bring us food from Springfield. Maybe there really is a Santa Claus. July 29. Johnny, Dad, and Lisa are due sometime tomorrow. Mom says she wrote to Johnny's camp to let them know Dad would be picking him up. She can only hope the camp got the letter. Life was easier when you could count on the telephone working. At supper tonight, Mom said she didn't know how long Dad and Lisa would be staying here, but she thought a week, maybe less. I don't want him driving all the way to Las Vegas, worrying about us, she declared. So as long as he and Lisa are here, we're going to be eating 3 meals a day. Mom, Matt said, is that realistic? We'll manage, Mom said. We've managed so far. Half of me, okay, more like 3/4, love the idea of 3 meals a day. Even with what passes for meals around here, that's pretty exciting. I'm used to being hungry now, and it really isn't that bad, but still, not being hungry sounds fabulous. But there's that mean little part of me that's wondering if Mom's changing the rules because she doesn't know what to do about Johnny. We, except for Mom, were on 3 meals a day, at least officially, when he left. Sometimes at night when I have trouble falling asleep, I think about the future, which only makes it harder for me to fall asleep. But I do it anyway, like probing a cavity with your tongue. Not the immediate future, which is bad enough, but the 6 months from now future, or the year from now future, if we're still alive. Mom must be trying to work out the future as well. Maybe she thinks we'd be better off if Matt moved on, like lots of people are doing, or if I found some guy to protect me, the way Sammy did. Then, whatever food she has would be for Johnny until he's old enough to take care of himself. But I know Mom loves Matt and me too much to sacrifice us, and Johnny needs food now to keep growing and stay strong. Which is the real problem for Mom, one that I think she's decided not to deal with until after Dad and Lisa are gone. July 30th. Johnny and Dad and Lisa are here. They got here this evening, and it's been wonderful. Johnny looks good. He said they fed them pretty well, even though the farm was hard work and cut into baseball time. Dad's lost a few pounds, but he's always been thin, and it's not like he looks gaunt. Just thinner. Definitely older, though, than when I saw him in April. His hair is a lot grayer, and his face is way more lined. Lisa looks okay. You can tell she's pregnant, but she isn't big yet. I don't know if she should be looking more pregnant than she is, but her face is still round and her skin tone is great. My guess is Dad's seeing to it that she's eating properly, even if that means he's eating less than normal. I could see Dad checking all of us out, just like we were checking out him and Lisa. I wish I weighed more. Never thought I'd say that, because I could see he was worried, and he has enough to worry about. That Johnny looked pretty much the same and hoped Mom and Matt and I would too. Not that Dad said anything except how great we all looked and how wonderful it was to see us and how much fun they had driving Johnny home and hearing all about baseball camp. But even though it was wonderful seeing that Dad really is okay, because you have to worry when you don't see someone for a long time, the best part was all the stuff he brought us. He and Lisa came in a minivan and it was loaded top to bottom. Dad had labeled all the boxes, and he left at least half of them in the van, which we hid in the garage. You don't leave stuff out anymore. Even so, it took us 10 to 15 minutes to unload the boxes just for us. It really was like Christmas. Dad brought us cases of canned food, chicken noodle soup and vegetables and fruit and tuna fish. I actually lost count of how many cases, but I'd guess at least 30, with each case holding 24 cans, boxes of pasta and powdered milk and mashed potatoes, jars of meat sauce and applesauce, cases of bottled water, and a half dozen jugs of distilled water. "Where did it all come from?" Matt asked. Mom was crying too hard to talk. "The college," Dad said. "It's not opening in the fall, and the dorm kitchens had all this food. Lots of the staff had already gone, so those of us who were still there would divide up what was there. I'm taking a lot with us for the road and for Lisa's parents and Mom, just in case they need it." But that wasn't all, although it certainly could have been. They gave us 4 blankets and batteries and a box of matches and sheets and towels and washcloths and toothpaste, perfume soap for me, kerosene, insect repellent and sunscreen. We all laughed at that. Track suits for all of us, which of course were baggy but still wearable, and 2 working power saws and a 2-handled saw. "I figured while I was here, I'd help with the firewood," Dad said. "Oh, and a battery-run lamp," which we agreed made the sunroom look bright and cheerful. Mom calmed down enough to go into her room and pull out the boxes of stuff we'd bought for Lisa's baby. All those cheap clothes she'd been so excited to find. So help me, Lisa burst into tears when she saw what Mom had gotten. She kept hugging Mom and me, thanking us for thinking of her and the baby. Dad started crying too, and the only thing that kept me from crying right along with them was my thinking how totally weird this all was, and Johnny rolling his eyes, and Matt looking so embarrassed, which made me want to laugh instead of cry. Lisa unfolded every single piece of clothing, and we oohed and aahed like it was a baby shower. Well, Matt and Johnny skipped the oohing and aahing and unpacked some of the food instead. I have to admit, the little overalls really were cute. We stayed up until past 10, and then Mom, who's sleeping in the sunroom, so Dad and Lisa can have her bedroom, shoot us out. I'm staying up late because I feel rich with batteries. It's fun to be extravagant. I know it won't last, that even those mountains of food Dad brought us aren't going to last us forever. But for tonight, I can make believe. July 31. Dad says however much wood we think we're going to need, we're actually going to need a whole lot more. And the most important thing he can do while he's here is chop. He also said we can't store the wood outside, even right by the side of the house. It'll be gone by October, he said. Nothing's going to be safe. Mom thought about it and decided the best place to store the firewood was the dining room, since we never eat in there anymore. Not that we ate there all that often before. So after breakfast this morning, which we all ate, we moved the furniture out of the dining room and into the living room. All the breakables had to be moved first, and it was tricky because we couldn't wrap things up in newspaper like we would have if there were still newspapers. But we didn't break anything. Then came the furniture, the break front and the sideboard and the table and the chairs. Even Lisa carried chairs out, although Dad watched over her like she was one of the breakables. The living room looks like a used furniture store, Johnny said. Like an antique shop, Mom corrected him. Either way, the living room is pretty much unusable now, but we haven't been spending much time in there anyway. Once the furniture was moved, Dad and Matt went out to cut down trees. Johnny and I carried the logs we already had into the dining room. Mom covered the dining room floor with sheets so it wouldn't get permanently scarred. After we finished bringing the firewood in, Johnny went out to help Dad and Matt. I went into the woods and collected more kindling. I think I crossed onto Mrs. Nesbitt's property, but I know she won't mind if I take some of her kindling. She really ought to move in with us. I don't know how she's going to make it through the winter otherwise. I'm so used to skipping brunch that I did without thinking about it, which is pretty funny. The first time in ages when we don't have to worry about food, and I skipped a meal anyway. Supper was a disappointment, just tuna fish and canned string beans. Somehow I imagined a feast. Mom and Lisa actually giggled when they saw my reaction. We're going to have a real dinner party on Tuesday, Mom said. Just hold on. A real dinner party? I wish we'd saved the dining room until then. But even if the food wasn't so exciting, supper tonight was actually fun. It was great having Johnny back, and it was his first chance to tell us about what camp had been like. A lot of the kids hadn't shown, which meant more food for the ones who were there, but fewer guys to play ball with. And the farm work was hard, especially in the beginning. But after the sky had been gray for a while, the animals began feeling the difference, and the chickens didn't lay as many eggs, and milk production went down. Only we didn't want to talk about that, so we switched topics real fast. Dad told jokes, and it was so funny watching Mom and Lisa's eyes roll. But I think the best thing that happened today was that Horton finally forgave Johnny for leaving him. Horton's been ignoring Johnny since he got home. He's been sitting on Matt's lap, on my lap, on Mom's lap, once even on Dad's lap. And since Lisa doesn't want to have a thing to do with him, Horton's been flinging himself at her. We've all been laughing about it, except maybe Lisa, and maybe Johnny, and maybe me, since I keep remembering how hysterical I was at the thought of having to tell Johnny his precious Horton was gone forever. But tonight after supper, we sat around in the sunroom with our lovely battery light shining, and Mom crocheting while Lisa watched, and Dad, Matt, Johnny, and me playing Monopoly, which was irresistible to Horton, who had to knock pieces around. Once he established the floor was his turf, and he was allowing us to use it out of his great benevolence, he checked us all out and then curled up right next to Johnny and demanded to get his head scratched. Which Johnny did. Horton purred like a kitten, and for a glorious moment, all felt right with the world. August 1. It turns out Mom's definition of a dinner party is us, Dad, and Lisa, Mrs. Nesbitt, and Peter. I think it's a little weird for Mom to invite Peter, but then again, it's weird having Lisa staying here, so why not? Mom asked me to bike over to Mrs. Nesbitt's to let her know, and then to Peter's office to invite him. Johnny's been chopping wood from the trees Dad and Matt have been cutting down, so I was the one most available. Mrs. Nesbitt's been huffy about Dad ever since the divorce, but when I invited her, she practically glowed with excitement. "I'm not getting out very much these days," she confided, which struck both of us as so funny. We laughed until we cried. I biked into town, inhaling dank, ashy air, and went first to Peter's office, only there was a sign on his door saying he'd closed his office and could be found from now on at the hospital. It wasn't surprising that Peter's closed his office, but it was another one of those things that make me realize how different the world's become. The past couple of days have been so great, I'd been forgetting what really is going on. Even the gray, which I thought I'd never get used to, is just part of life now. Things are different when you know where your next meal is coming from. I went to the hospital, which was incredibly busy. I was stopped in the lobby and asked who I wanted to see. I said Peter, and it was personal. The hospital still has electricity, and it was weird seeing a building all lit up. It was like a fairyland, or at least like a theme park. Hospital land? It made me think of the amusement park dream I had a while ago. Of course, things were different at the hospital. The gift shop was closed, and so was the coffee shop. I guess it's a no-frills hospital, but even so, it seemed magical. The security guard, armed, I noticed, paged Peter, and finally I was told to go to the third floor east wing. Elevators are only for the sick, the elderly, and the handicapped, the guard said. I took the hint and used the stairs. Peter looked exhausted, but otherwise okay. I told him Dad and Lisa were with us and that Johnny had gotten home safely and that we were having a dinner party tomorrow night and Mom wanted him to come. If Peter felt weird about it, it sure didn't show. He grinned almost as big as Mrs. Nesbitt and said he'd be delighted. "I haven't left here in almost a week," he said. "I'm due an evening out." It's funny. I sort of dread Peter's visits. He always brings us something, even if it's just a can of spinach. But it feels like all he knows how to talk about are illness and death. But he looked so happy at the invitation that it made me feel good to know he'd be coming tomorrow for a real meal and a nice night out, even if it was with his kind of girlfriend, her kids, her ex-husband, and his pregnant wife, and of course, Mrs. Nesbitt. As I was walking down the hallway to the staircase, I ran into Dan. I was so startled to see him, I gasped. He looked just as shocked. "What are you doing here?" I asked, before he had the chance to ask me the same thing. "My mom's here," he said. "West Nile. She's going to be okay, but it's been a rough couple of weeks." I felt awful when I thought about how angry I'd been at him. Dan took my arm. "There's something I want to tell you," he said. "Where are you going?" "Just to the stairs," I said. "I mean, back home." "I'll walk you outside," he said, and removed his arm, which made me sad. Somehow I thought that his arm would slide down to my hand and we'd walk together like we used to. But instead, we walked like two different people, each with important stuff on our minds. We went outside to the bike rack where my bike chain was double locked. "Miranda," Dan said, and then he stopped. "It's okay," I said. "Just tell me." "I'm going to be leaving soon," he said. "Next Monday, probably." I would have gone sooner, but I wanted to make sure Mom was going to be okay before I did. I thought of Sammy and Dad and Lisa and wondered how many more people would be leaving my life. "Do you know where?" I asked. Dan shook his head. "First, we thought we'd all be going," he said, "Mom and Dad and me, to California because that's where my sister lives." Only we saw her name on one of the lists. "That's how you find out. Nobody notifies you. You just see the name." Dad took it okay. He didn't go crazy or anything. But Mom was hysterical, and she kept not believing it. So I said if I could figure out a way to, I could go. I wanted to tell him how sorry I was. I wanted to kiss him and hold him and comfort him. Instead, I just stood there and listened. Dad said that was a mistake, and we had to keep on living. And Mom was so beside herself, it really didn't matter, he continued. "You don't know what it's like. I'm glad you don't, Miranda. I guess this hasn't really touched you yet. I hope it never does." And then it was summer, and I couldn't really figure out what was I supposed to be doing. So I swam, and I thought about loving you, but it didn't seem fair to you or me, because Dad decided I should leave. It was his idea, and he told me first before he told Mom, because he knew she'd get hysterical. He swapped his car for a motorcycle, and he taught me how to ride it. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave my folks or you, but Dad insisted, and I would have been gone weeks ago except Mom got sick. Dad and I both worried if I left while she was sick, she might not make it. But now she's recovering, and I need to get going while the weather is still okay. Dad says the first frost should be in a couple of weeks. In August, I said. Dan nodded. Dad says we'll be lucky if we go without a heavy frost before September. Has your family thought about leaving? My father and stepmother are, I said. They're staying with us for a few days, and then they're going west. Maybe I'll see them on the road, Dan said. Miranda, I wish things could have been different. I want you to know I really liked you a lot before all this. I was getting up my nerve to invite you to the prom. I thought about how much that invitation would have meant to me. I would have said yes, I said. Maybe we'd still get to go to a prom someday. If I'm here, it's a date, he said. I'll try to write, but I don't know if letters are going to get through, Miranda. I'll never forget you, no matter what happens. I'll remember you and Miller's Pond. That's the only good thing that's happened. We kissed. It's funny how much that kiss meant. I may never kiss another boy again. Not the same way I kissed Dan. I have to get back in, Dan said. Mom will be wondering. Good luck, I said. I hope wherever you end up, things are better. We kissed again, but it was a quick goodbye kiss. Dan walked back into the hospital while I stood there and watched. I know Dan thinks I'm lucky, that I've been untouched by everything that's happened. And I know I'm self-pitying to think otherwise. But sometimes I wonder if the big cannonball horror of knowing someone you love has died is all that much worse than the everyday attrition of life. Except I know it is, because Dan lost his sister, and I've lost no one, not to death at least, not that I know. And Dan has the same attrition that I have, only his mother's been close to dying also. Honestly, I know how lucky I am. But my heart feels like breaking because he didn't ask me to the prom in May. I could always have had that, and now I never will, and I don't think I'll ever have anything nearly as wonderful to dream about. August 2nd. What a feast! Mom and Lisa baked bread, using the last of the yeast. Of course, we couldn't have a regular mixed salad. It's amazing the thing one misses. Who would have thought I'd be nostalgic for iceberg lettuce? But Mom took a can of string beans and a can of kidney beans and tossed them with olive oil and vinegar and declared it a two-bean salad. Our main course was spaghetti with meat sauce. Sure, the meat came out of a jar, but I don't remember the last time I had any kind of beef, except in my dreams. For vegetable, we had mushrooms. Peter brought two bottles of wine, one white and one red, since he didn't know what we'd be having for dinner. Mom let Johnny and me have a glass of wine. Because, hey, the world is coming to an end, so why not? Mrs. Nesbitt made dessert. She baked meringue shells from powdered egg whites and filled them with chocolate pudding. We ate in the sunroom. We set up the metal folding table and covered it with a pretty tablecloth and carried in the dining room chairs from the living room. Mom lit candles and we had a fire going in the wood stove. Mom used to pride herself on her cooking. She was always trying out recipes. The way the world used to be, Mom never would have served jarred meat sauce or canned mushrooms. But she was so proud and excited by dinner tonight, and we made an equal fuss over Mrs. Nesbitt's dessert. Maybe it was the smell of fresh baked bread, or maybe it was the wine, or maybe it was something as basic as having enough food, but we all had a great time. I wondered what it would be like having Peter and Dad together. They handle things the way Mom and Lisa do, like they were old friends, and having dinner together was the most normal thing in the world. We all talked, we all joked, we all enjoyed ourselves. After dinner, Matt and I cleared off the table. Nobody wanted the evening to end, so we kept sitting around the table. I don't remember what we were talking about, but it couldn't have been anything too serious because we didn't talk seriously all evening long. Even Peter kept his dead stuff to himself. When Johnny asked, "Are we all going to die?" "Come on," Mom said. "My cooking isn't that bad." "No, I mean it," Johnny said. "Are we going to die?" Mom and Dad exchanged looks. Not in the immediate future, Matt said. We have food and fuel. We'll be okay. But what happens when the food runs out? Johnny asked. Excuse me, Lisa said. I don't like to discuss this. She got up and left the room. Dad looked torn. Finally, he got up and went after her. So we were back to us, the us I've gotten used to the past couple of months. John, you're entitled to an honest answer, Peter said. But we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the government will get more food to us. There have to be supplies somewhere. All we can do is go day by day and hope for the best. I won't survive all this, I know, Mrs. Nesbitt said. But I'm an old woman, Johnny. You're a young boy, and a strong, healthy one. But what if things get worse, I asked. I still don't know why, but maybe it was because Johnny just been told he'd live, and nobody was bothering to tell me that. What if the volcanoes aren't the last bad thing to happen? What if the Earth survives but humans don't? That could happen, couldn't it? And not a million years from now, either. That could happen now, or next year, or 5 years from now. What happens then? When I was a kid, I was fascinated by dinosaurs, Peter said. The way kids are. I read everything I could read about them, learned all the Latin names, could recognize one just from a skeleton. I couldn't get over how those amazing animals could just disappear. But of course they didn't disappear. They evolved into birds. Life may not continue the way we know it today, but it will continue. Life endures. I'll always believe that. Insects survive everything, Matt said. They'll survive this too. Great, I said. Cockroaches are going to evolve. Mosquitoes are going to be the size of eagles. Maybe butterflies will grow, Matt said. Picture butterflies with foot-long wingspans, Miranda. Picture the world blazing with the color of butterflies. My money is on the mosquitoes, Mrs. Nesbitt said, and we were so startled by her cynicism that we burst into laughter. We laughed so loud, Horton woke up with a start and leaped off Johnny's lap, which made us laugh even louder. Dad came back down then, but Lisa never did. August 3. Dad and Matt worked all day. When Dad came in for supper, he told us he and Lisa would be leaving first thing tomorrow morning. I know I shouldn't be surprised, but it still hurt to hear it. Lisa pretty much stuck to bed today. Mom went in there a couple of times to make sure she was okay, but it didn't seem to make a difference. She's worried about her parents, Mom said to me, and of course she's worried about the baby. She wants to be settled in as soon as possible. The longer they wait, the harder it may be to travel. I wonder if Lisa would be in such a hurry to go if Johnny hadn't asked about the world ending. Dad made tuna fish sandwiches for himself and Lisa and took hers up to their room. For a long time, I think he might stay there and then leave early tomorrow morning, and I wouldn't have a chance to see him again. But after an hour or so, he joined us in the sunroom. How about sitting on the porch with me, Miranda? He said. Sure, I said, and the two of us walked out together. I haven't had much of a chance to talk with you, Dad said, after we sat down on the porch swing. I spent a lot of time with Matt and Johnny, but not much with you. That's okay, I said. Cutting the wood was the important thing. You and your brothers are the important thing, Dad said. Miranda, I want you to know how proud I am of you. Proud of me, I asked. Why? For a million reasons, Dad said. For being smart and funny and beautiful. For finding swimming when skating didn't work out. For all the things you're doing to make your mother's life easier. For not complaining when you have so much to complain about. For being a daughter any father would be proud of. I knew asking you to be the baby's godmother was the right thing. In the past few days, I realized just how right it is. I'm so glad I'm your father. I love you so much. I love you too, I said. And the baby is going to be all right. Everything will be. I just know it. I know it too, Dad said, and we hugged. We sat there quietly for a while because we both knew anything we said would spoil the mood. Then Dad got up and went back to Lisa. I sat on the porch a little while longer and thought about babies and butterflies and what the rest of my life was going to be like. When I thought every thought I possibly could think, I went back inside and listened for a while to the silence. August 4. Dad and Lisa left at 6 this morning. We all got up when they did, and we had a breakfast together. Mom found a jar of strawberry jam and used the last of the bread. We had canned peaches and powdered orange drink mix. Dad and Mom had coffee. Lisa had tea. Dad hugged all of us and kissed us all goodbye. It took all my willpower not to cling to him. We all know we may never see each other again. Dad promised he'd write every chance he got, and he'd make sure to let us know how Grandma is. When they got in the car, Lisa did the driving. I think that's because Dad was crying so hard, he knew he couldn't drive. Chapter 9, August 6. I woke up this morning thinking, I'll never see Sammy again. I'll never see Dan again. I'm so scared I'll never see Dad again. I don't know how I'll survive if I never see sunlight again. August 7. I went into Matt's room before supper to see if he had any library books to return tomorrow. Matt walked in as I was looking. What the hell are you doing in my room? He shouted. I was so startled I just stood there. I've been chopping wood all day, he said. I'm tired and I'm filthy and hungry, and I have to be with Johnny every damn minute, and I swear I would kill Dad for not staying here to take care of us. I'm sorry, I stammered. Well, so am I, he said. Fat lot of good that does. August 9. We're all in a funk. You would think knowing we actually have food in the house would cheer us up, but nothing seems to. I've noticed that Mom's skipping breakfast again, and for the past couple of days, I haven't seen her eat lunch either. Matt's been chopping wood all day long, so I guess he's not eating any lunch. He hasn't been real chatty lately. Nobody's telling me what to do, but I guess I'd better go back to brunch also. It scares me that Mom is eating less when we do have food in the house. It must mean she doesn't think the stuff Dad brought and what we still had before he came is going to last long enough. You've got to think something in this world would get back to normal. I don't remember the last time we had electricity, not even for a few minutes in the middle of the night. Mom makes sure at least one of us goes into town every day to see if there's any news at the post office. It's become the community bulletin board, or if there's a food giveaway. But we all come back empty-handed. It's getting colder, too. The temperature today never even hit 60. August 11. First frost, just a light one, but nonetheless. Why are we staying here? Johnny asked me this morning. Everybody else is moving down south. Everybody else isn't moving, I said, mostly because I was flustered by the question. Johnny's never been much of a talker, but since she came home from camp, he's been even quieter than usual. It's like this whole business had made him old before he ever had a chance to be a teenager. Half the kids at camp said their families were planning to move, Johnny said, and camp was less than half full. I ran into Aaron in town yesterday, and he said so many kids from school had already left, they're talking about closing down some of the schools. Aaron isn't exactly a reliable witness, I said. His father is on the school board, Johnny said. Okay, I said, so he is a reliable witness, but we're not going anywhere, and you'd better not talk to Mom about this. Do you think we should go? Johnny asked. It felt so strange because he sounded like I do when I asked Matt stuff like that. We can't leave Mrs. Nesbitt, I said, and to get in our car and drive someplace without knowing where we'd end up or if there'd be food there and a place to live? Some people can do that. I don't think Mom can. Maybe one of us should go, Johnny said. Matt or me. You could stay here with Mom and Mrs. Nesbitt. You're not old enough, I said, so stop thinking about it. We'll be okay. We have food, we have wood, we even have some oil for the furnace. Things are bound to get better. They can't get worse. Johnny grinned. That's what they all said, he pointed out, and they've all been wrong. August 14. At supper tonight, canned chicken and mixed vegetables, Johnny said, I know my birthday is coming, but I don't expect any presents, so don't worry about it. I had totally forgotten about Johnny's birthday. When I list all the things I miss, I need to include shopping. Mom said that was very mature of Johnny, and she had to admit she didn't have anything for his birthday, but that didn't mean it wasn't going to be a special day, which I guess means an extra vegetable at supper or maybe some canned fruit salad for dessert, Or maybe we'll drink the other bottle of wine Peter brought and all get drunk. It kind of annoys me that Johnny's making these big grown-up gestures and I'm not. I can't exactly say don't worry about my birthday, since it's in March, and I think we'll have lots of other stuff to worry about between now and then. I'm back to 2 meals a day, but that's not exactly a big grown-up gesture around here. Also, even though none of us is saying it, we're all worried because there's been no word from Dad. The mail is so weird. Letters can take weeks to arrive, and probably a lot of mail doesn't make it through at all. There's no reason to think we'd have heard anything by now, but it's scary to think of him and Lisa driving into the void. Mom listens to the radio every morning, and I'm pretty sure if the rest of the United States had evaporated or something, she'd mention it. So Dad and Lisa are probably safe wherever they are. Still, we'd all like to hear. August 15. I asked Mom if things were better than they had been. Had all the bad stuff, the floods and the earthquakes and the volcanoes, stopped? She said no. That once the moon's gravitational pull had changed, things could never go back to where they'd been. But things aren't any worse, I said. Mom obviously didn't feel like answering that. How much worse can they get, I asked. Mom explained that there were volcanoes erupting in all kinds of unexpected places, like Montreal. It seems there's a volcano there that never erupted because the Earth's crust had been too thick. But now that the moon's pull is so much stronger, the lava was able to break through the crust. The volcanoes cause fires and the earthquakes cause fires, and the tsunamis get bigger and bigger, so there's less and less coastline, and people are fleeing places with volcanoes and earthquakes and floods, so things are getting worse, even in the stable places. And of course, there are epidemics. Once Mom got started, there was no stopping her. We've already had 3 nights with frost, but New England and the upper Midwest have already had weeks of killing frost. All the crops there have died. Oh, and there was an earthquake right by the nuclear power plant, and it exploded or something. I think that was California. Now, do you see how lucky we are? She demanded. I never said we weren't, I yelled, because I hadn't, or at least I hadn't today. All I did was ask if things were getting better, which isn't exactly the same as saying I wish we had electricity and hot chocolate and television and a prom with an actual date to look forward to, all of which I think about every morning when I wake up and every night before I fall asleep. Don't use that tone with me, Mom shouted. What tone? I shouted right back. You're the one who's using a tone. How come you can yell at me and I have to just take it? We really went at it, which we haven't done in weeks, not since the whole horrible business with Horton. How ungrateful I am, how I just sit around and do nothing, how self-pitying I am. You're damn right I'm self-pitying, I shouted right back at her. Why shouldn't I be? It's bad enough my life is like this, and I have no idea if I'm going to survive. I'm stuck with a mother who doesn't love me. I should have gone with Dad and Lisa. He loves me, even if you don't. Go, Mom said. Just get out. I don't want to look at you. I was so stunned it took me a moment to run out of the house. But once I did, I had no idea where to go or what to do. I got my bike and let my legs tell me where to go. And much to my surprise, although I guess not to my legs' surprise, I ended up at Megan's. Megan's mom looked about 10 years older than she had when I saw her last month. But she smiled when she saw me, like it was the most normal thing for me to be popping in for a visit. At least she didn't remind me of Becky's mom anymore. Megan's in her room, she said. She'll be glad to see you. I went up to Megan's room. For a moment, I wondered what the hell I was doing there. But I knocked on her door and told her it was me and went on in. Megan was lying on her bed and reading the Bible. It was scary seeing how thin she'd gotten. But she didn't look crazy or anything, and these days you take what you can get. Miranda, she squealed, and for a moment she was my Megan. I'm so happy you're here. Sit down. Tell me everything. So I did. Every single thing. Mom and the fights and Johnny and Matt and Dad and Lisa and Horton and how Dan was going to ask me to the prom, only now he's gone. I must have talked nonstop for half an hour with Megan interrupting me only to ask a question or make some kind of sympathetic noise. Boy, she said when I finally finished, your life is terrible. I didn't know whether to burst into tears or laughter. Laughter won. I'm having one of those, except for that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play moments, I said. Everyone is, Megan said. Even you, I asked. Megan nodded. I know what I need to do, she said, and I'm doing it as best I can. But even though I know it's God's will and I can't question, I want to know Mom's soul is saved and Dad's and yours and everyone else's I've ever loved. I pray and pray, but I don't think it's making any difference. We're all in hell, Miranda. God knows what's best for us, but it's still hell. Does Reverend Marshall think that way, I asked. I was pretty shocked to hear Megan talk like that. He says God is punishing us for our sins, she said. We're all sinners. I know how sinful I am. I covet things, Miranda. Food. I covet food so much sometimes. And I have lustful thoughts. Don't look so shocked. I'm 16. You think I never had a lustful thought? Who for? I asked. Megan laughed. Tim Jenkins, she said, and James Bell, and Mr. Martin. We've all had crushes on Mr. Martin, I said. Half the girls at Howard High are going to hell if having a crush on Mr. Martin is a sin. But Tim Jenkins, I didn't think he was your type. He's kind of wild, Megan. I know, she said. I used to think if he loves me, I could get him to reform. But that wasn't how I lusted after him, if you know what I mean. I didn't lust after him just so I could save his soul. And Reverend Marshall thinks all the horrible stuff has happened because you lusted after Tim Jenkins, I asked. That's kind of simplistic, Megan said. My point was that I'm as much a sinner as anybody else, and I've hardly had a chance to do anything. I might have lustful thoughts, but Sammy's actually done something with hers, and if God is angry with her, then he's angry at her too, and pretty much everybody else on earth. We really have made a giant mess of things. Speak for yourself, I grumbled, and we both laughed. I can't believe the moon came crashing in because I want to go to the prom with Dan, I said. What's the point of God making us human if he doesn't want us to act like we're human? To see if we can rise above our natures, Megan said. Eve got Adam to eat the apple, and that was the end of the Garden of Eden. It all comes back to food, doesn't it, I said, and we laughed again. I can't tell you how it felt to be laughing with Megan. I know she's crazy to be flinging herself into death. When so many people are dying, you practically have to take a number and wait your turn. And she looked like a talking skeleton, but she was still Megan. For the first time since all this happened, I felt like I'd gotten something back. I think I'll go home, I said. I don't have any place else to go. Megan nodded. Miranda, she said, and she took one of those long pauses I've come to expect from people. Miranda, I don't know if we're ever going to see each other again. Of course we will, I said. Or are you and your mother planning on leaving? I think she'll go after I die, Megan said. But we're staying until then. In that case, I'm sure I'll see you again, I said. Megan shook her head. Don't come back, she said. I have to show God I'm truly repentant, and I can't do that if you make me think about Tim Jenkins and food and how awful things are now. I don't want to be angry at God, and seeing you makes me feel that way, just a little bit. So I can't see you again. I have to sacrifice our friendship because I don't have much left. I can sacrifice to prove to God how much I love him. I hate you, God, I said. Find your own then, she said. Go, Miranda, please. And if you ever hear from Sammy, tell her I prayed for her every day, just like I pray for you. I will, I said. Goodbye, Megan. And then the worst thing happened. She had been propped up on her bed for the whole time I'd been there. But when I got ready to go, she struggled to get off the bed, and I could see she barely had the strength to stand. She had to support herself as we hugged and kissed, and then she fell back onto the bed. I'm fine, she said. Go, Miranda. I love you. I love you, too, I said, and I ran away from her, house, without even saying goodbye to her mother. I got back on my bike and rode straight home. I probably burned off 3 days' worth of calories. I rode so fast. I put the bike in the garage and raced into the house. Mom was sitting in the kitchen sobbing. Mom, I cried, and I flung myself into her arms. She hugged me so hard I could barely breathe. Oh, Miranda, Miranda, she kept crying. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, too, I said, and I was. Not for anything I'd said earlier. I was sorry because I made Mom worry, and there's nothing I can do to keep her from worrying. I love her so much. In a world where there's so little good, she's good. Sometimes I forget that or resent it, but she is good, and she loves me, and every thought she has is to protect Matt and Johnny and me. If God's looking for sacrifices, all he has to do is look at Mom. August 18. Johnny's birthday. Mom took the afternoon off and we played baseball. We took turns catching, pitching, fielding, and hitting. Mom hit a ball so long it took Matt 5 minutes to find it. Then we went to Mrs. Nesbitt's for dinner. I have to admit that was a nice change, eating around someone else's kitchen table. She made quite the meal for us. We started with fruit salad, and then we had tuna noodle casserole and peas. For dessert, she'd made oatmeal raisin cookies that Johnny always loved. I could tell Mom was concerned because all that good oatmeal was going to cookies, but she had two anyway. The rest of us pigged out. I know I ate at least 4 cookies, which probably guarantees me a first-class ticket to hell for gluttony. But Mrs. Nesbitt beamed while we were eating. She must have been planning those cookies for weeks now, and she pulled off the surprise. Johnny said he wanted to make a speech, so we cheered him on. He actually stood up, and I guess he'd been working on what he wanted to say, because it was pretty close to perfect. He said he knew times were tough now, and we didn't know if the future was going to get any better. But the important thing was we had each other, and as long as we stuck together, we could make it through. He even said he loved us. Mom was crying, but they were happy tears. I know because I shed a few myself. It's funny. I remember my birthday so vividly. The fights Mom and I had because I wanted a big boy girl party and Mom wanted something simpler and easier. I yelled, "Trust!" at her, and she yelled, "Temptation!" right back at me. We started fighting over it the day after her birthday, and I don't think we stopped until the day before mine. 4 weeks of fighting over what kind of party I could have. In the end, it was perfectly fine. Boys and girls, pizza, cake, no beer, and a certain amount of unsupervised making out. It's hard to believe I was ever that young. I guess Johnny never will be.